You know those notes. You know those chords. Now I'm going to play a second song that you might be a little bit more unfamiliar with. What you're listening to is the comparison of two songs. And while you're very familiar with one of those, and probably not familiar with the other, today's story is a familiar one. A band plays a bit of music that sounds a lot like another song. A debate ensues. But in this case, the band is Led Zeppelin, and the song is, of course, Stairway to Heaven. A mega hit so popular, it's been ubiquitous in bars and on the radio for decades. Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelsang. Today, we're going to talk about those two songs. One vastly more famous, as is the band playing it, than the other. But together, both are in a heated court battle over Stairway to Heaven, on trial for chord theft. Stairway to Heaven is considered one of the most widely heard compositions in rock history, and is the signature song of Led Zeppelin. Jimmy Page said the song crystallized the essence of the band. Well, the band is accused of stealing the opening chords for their 1971 hit from another song. That other song, you just heard those chords from the other song by the band Spirit. The name of that song is Taurus. That song was done in 1967. There's so much of a dispute right now that a jury is deciding whether Robert Plant and Jimmy Page and the band Led Zeppelin are liable for copyright infringement. We're joined today by Lawrence Iser, an attorney based in Santa Monica, California, who focuses on intellectual property litigation, business litigation, and specializes in entertainment IP litigation within the music industry, among other areas of law. It's this last area, specializing in entertainment IP litigation, that Mr. Iser is here with us today. Larry Iser has represented the Beatles and Michael Jackson, Jackson Brown, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and many others. He's not directly involved with the Led Zeppelin case, but he's here today. Welcome, Larry Iser, attorney to the Not Old Better Show.
Larry Iser, welcome to the Not Old Better Show. My listeners are, of course, very familiar with this 1971 classic song and music, and probably even familiar with this case that's going on right now. The chord progression that's in dispute, that's in question, I've heard you say that there really are only 12 notes on the music scale. And if that's the case, then we're bound to have heard this same progression in other songs, in other places, and it seems like we just would be awash in copyright litigation if all of this were taken to kind of that degree. Is that a kind of a good assessment?
First of all, thanks for having me on.
And thank you.
I think that's a great assessment. In fact, from my perspective, I kind of feel we are awash in copyright litigation right now. And maybe we'll talk about Blurred Lines later. But you can credit the terrible decision in Blurred Lines for what is a torrent of copyright litigation going on right now.
Agreed. So if these chord progressions are so common, and maybe they're even cliched, do they even deserve a copyright protection?
Well, that is the main question for the jury and for the judge to decide in the Led Zeppelin case. In order to prevail on a copyright infringement case, the plaintiff needs to prove to the satisfaction to the jury that there is what's called substantial similarity in original expression of musicological elements between the two compositions. So let me break that down for you. Mm-hmm. Substantial similarity means to a juror listening to it, they kind of sound the same. But the key point is they may sound the same, but is the plaintiff who's making the accusation based on his song, in this case, it's the song Taurus by the band Spirit, is Spirit's use of this particular progression original? Because if it's not original, and by original means that no one's done it before, if it's not original expression, then they can't premise their copyright protection on something that's not original. So in this case, what do we have? What they're accusing Led Zeppelin of taking is not the entire song Stairway to Heaven, but just the beginning, just the introduction. And when you break it down, what they're saying is that there's this bass line, mm-hmm. the Spirit had in Taurus, and it consists of an A minor chord, which starts with the bass note A, which then descends to a G, and then descends to an F sharp, and then to the note F in the bass, and then finally to E. And it is that progression, that chord progression, with an A minor chord with a descending bass line that they're claiming that Led Zeppelin stole in order to create the introduction to Stairway to Heaven. The problem that they're going to have is that on the defense side, they've hired as their expert musicologist, Dr. Lawrence Ferrara from NYU at the Steinhardt School. And Dr. Ferrara, in my opinion, is probably the premier musicological expert that testifies in litigation. I've used him probably in over a dozen cases. He's just the very best there is. I would expect that when Dr. Ferrara testifies, he's going to present any large number of examples of music that pre-existed the recording of the song Taurus by the band Spirit that has, if not the identical walking, descending chromatic bass line, then something extremely similar to that. And while I haven't spent a lot of time looking through my music books, I can tell you that Led Zeppelin had a previous song known as Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You, mm-hmm. which has that identical descending chromatic bass line. George Harrison, and I mentioned to you earlier that I had spent a number of years representing the music of the Beatles and the Beatles themselves mm-hmm. in copyright litigation. His song, While My Guitar Gently Weeps, has also that identical descending chromatic bass line. And my favorite band of all time, Chicago, probably their most famous song, is it's not just a descending bass line, but their song 25 or 6 to 4. The entirety of that song consists of, and it's in the key of A minor going down with a descending bass line, G, to F sharp, to F, to E. That's not just the introduction, it's the whole song. So when Spirit, when Spirit files this lawsuit and claims this is original to them, I take a look at that and I say, very hard for me to believe. And I think the overwhelming evidence that's going to be presented this week in that federal courtroom in Los Angeles is going to demonstrate to everybody's satisfaction that that's just not the case, that the accused piece of music from Stairway to Heaven was not original to the band Spirit and their song Taurus.
And you and I talked about Dr. Ferraro, of course, and I think there's even a piece of music, and maybe Dr. Ferraro is referring to this piece of music from the 17th century. It's in the public domain, and I think it's very reminiscent of these same notes. Is that part of all of this, too?
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Ferraro will go back to classical literature and he will work his way up. He'll go back and find the very earliest reference he can. And they played it last night on the CBS Evening News. Mm-hmm. I had been interviewed for that and they played a early piece of music from the 1700s from Italy, mm-hmm. which sounds to me strikingly similar to the introduction to Stairway to Heaven. And what Dr. Ferraro typically does is he starts with his oldest reference, and he works his way up to the classical music, and then he'll work his way into popular music. And as I said, I'd be surprised if he doesn't have several dozen examples, because this particular descending chromatic bass line is very common in popular music and in rock and roll.
Of course, with your legal expertise, would the defense then want to, along with introducing Dr. Ferraro and this music from the 17th century, would they show that Jimmy Page and Robert Plant had access to this 17th century song, and would that be enough to get them off the hook? Or what does copyright require in order to find this full infringement?
Well, the burden of proof actually is on Spirit. It's on the plaintiff to prove the infringement. And the defenses that Led Zeppelin will raise, I think there's essentially three of them. First of all, as I've already mentioned, they're going to take the position that there's a descending chromatic bass line is not an original expression of music to actually sustain a copyright claim. They're also going to make a claim, and it's a technical one, based on ownership. They're going to claim that Michael Skidmore, who is the executor for the estate of Randy Wolf, that this particular song, Taurus, was actually, I believe, either sold or given away or licensed to somebody else, such that they don't really have standing because the estate of Randy Wolfe doesn't actually own this song at this point. And the third argument they're going to make, which I think is what you're getting for, is will Jimmy Page and Robert Plant get on the stand and tell their story of how they created it? And they already started yesterday. And yes, they're both there. And the reason they're there is they're going to tell the jury how it was they came up with Stairway to Heaven. And any number of cases that I've handled, when you have a celebrity client, you know, of the status of a Jimmy Page or Robert Plant, the jury wants to hear from them, and they want to hear how the song was created. Over the years, I've represented artists, not just the Beatles, but also Michael Jackson. And I will tell you that whenever Michael came out with a new record, there were multiple claims of copyright infringement for almost every song. And most of those we got disposed of very quickly, but a couple would go to trial. And in those cases, Michael would take the stand and he would explain where he was when he came up with the idea for the song. I remember one case where he testified that he just woke up one morning and he woke up and he had this idea for a song in his head, and he got out a tape recorder and he sang it into the tape recorder. And the jury watches the witness and they decide, just by looking at their eyes and looking at their manner, like you would look at any witness in any trial, does he seem to be telling the truth? Does this story make sense? Does the witness appear credible? So yes, you can expect that Jimmy Page and Robert Plant, and as well as their bass player, are all going to get on the stand. They're going to talk about the creation of Stairway to Heaven, and they're going to testify that they did not hear the song Taurus, and if they did, it wasn't an influence on them.
Well, this song, Stairway to Heaven, and we've talked about this a little bit too, is 45 years old, and it is a wonderful song. I've heard it referred to as the song that crystallized Led Zeppelin, and so it's just an icon. But at 45 years old, why are we just now facing this case today, Larry? And with huge amounts of earnings and royalties, it just seems like a staggering amount of money to be discussing as a possible award. Is it possible that there's going to be a judgment that could result in hundreds of millions of dollars being paid by Led Zeppelin in this case?
No, not possible in this case. And that's because of a legal defense known as the statute of limitations. And for copyright infringement, the statute of limitations is what we call a rolling 3 years, which means that a plaintiff in a copyright case, if he can prove copyright infringement, is entitled to his damages based on 3 years of sales preceding the filing of the lawsuit, but no more than that. So if this lawsuit, which is going to trial in 2016, was filed in 2014, which I believe it was, that means that the damages would start for sales of Stairway to Heaven in 2011 and could then be brought forward to the time of the trial, but you're not going to be going back to 1971 when Led Zeppelin came out with Stairway to Heaven and get damages going all the way back, and that's because of the statute of limitations.
That's very interesting news. I appreciate you sharing that, as well as all the specificity around the music, the notes, and everything else. And I want to segue for just a second and talk about the music business in general following the Blurred Lines song decision. You mentioned that earlier. I'd like to talk about that a little bit. It just seems like the ramifications to some of these decisions are enormous in the music industry, whether it's these large judgments that I do understand now are limited by statute of limitations. But I think the Blurred Lines case, I think that award was somewhere around $7 million. It just seems like we are walking backwards artistically, that labels aren't going to be interested in introducing music that is in any way close to this line, and then of course not crossing it. And so it just seems like these decisions, whether it's sampling or plagiarism or what have you, they really are having quite an impact on the music business. And I know you work a great deal in your practice with entertainment and the music business. So what's your thought about where this is all headed with regard to kind of just the future of the music business and creativity in general?
Look, the Blurred Lines decision was the worst decision I have seen in my practice of law, and I've been practicing copyright law since 1980. Because it was the worst decision ever, it does have a terrible impact on the music business. But let me first start off with why it was such a bad decision. When I defined the copyright infringement for you earlier, I told you that the test for copyright infringement is substantial similarity in original expression of musicological elements. When we talk about musicological elements in the context of a musical composition, we're talking about two things. Historically, what is protected by the copyright in a musical composition are the melody and the lyrics. We know what lyrics are. Those are the words. What is a melody? A melody is an arrangement of notes in a particular rhythm. And in order to find copyright infringement, you're going to need to have substantial similarity in those things. And you don't have to have lyric if, in fact, all you stole was the music. But you're going to need to have one or both of those. And the problem with Blurred Lines is they had neither. If you go note by note and you compare the phrasing and the notes and the melody of Blurred Lines with Marvin Gaye's song, which was called Got to Give It Up, there is no overlap. In terms of melody, there's no overlap in the arrangement of notes in a particular rhythm. There's certainly no overlap in the lyric. What the musicologist said to the jury was, well, the vibe was the same. You know, Got to Give It Up. It was a party atmosphere. It was a feel of a party. And so that vibe was the same, and said the genre was the same. And it's true, if you listen to Blurred Lines, you hear clinking glasses, you hear people at a party, and it does feel like a party vibe. The problem is that copyright does not protect vibe. Copyright does not protect genre. The vibe is sort of a feel of music, but that's not what is protected by a musical composition. And I'll tell you the reason for that, because you could take any musical composition. You could take Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, you could play it as a classical piece, or you could play it as a Motown song. Or you could play it as an R&B, depending on your arrangement. And it's the same song. So genre is not part of what is protected. So for the jury to have concluded based on genre and vibe, which was fed to it by the musicologist, that was just wrong. And so my hope is that when the case gets up to the Ninth Circuit, which it will either later this year or early next year, that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal, which governs the district courts in Los Angeles, they're going to reverse the case and say, no, the jury improperly considered elements that are not musicological elements that are proper to be considered for copyright infringement. I hope that's the case, because if they don't, and that opinion is allowed to stand, yes, it's going to have a very chilling effect on the producer and the artist that goes into the recording studio, because they're always going to be looking over their shoulder. They're always going to be wondering, wow, if I want to do a song as a homage to a Michael Jackson or an homage to Prince or an homage to Marvin Gaye, because I grew up loving Marvin Gaye. Well, the Marvin Gaye estate may come after me if I don't get a license, even though I'm not going to copy his lyrics, and even though I'm not going to copy his melody. I'm not going to copy his song, but I sure do want to evoke that wonderful feeling that Marvin Gaye exuded when he sang. But if you can get sued for copyright infringement for that, I'm going to be afraid to go into the studio. And what we're going to have is a chilling effect on creative expression. And that's the absolute antithesis of what the founding fathers had in mind when they granted copyright protection in the Constitution.
It seems almost as if it's a question that is of maybe inspiration or appropriation. And those two kind of come to mind to me. But I want to get back to something you said just a few minutes ago, Larry, and this is my final question. I know we're kind of getting at the end of our time together, but I want to ask you just finally, how is it not possible to be influenced by what's come before you? I can't even imagine that. You naturally would be influenced by a vibe. And if juries are confused by that, then I think there's only one conclusion, and that's maybe where the bad verdict came from. But I just can't imagine that, you know, a time when you wouldn't be influenced by what's come before you.
You know, it's interesting. The Supreme Court, in dealing with copyright issues in the context of fair use, and this is not a fair use case, but they look to see whether or not when you use somebody's previous expression, their previous original expression, if you transform it, if your new expression is transformative of what came before you, that constitutes fair use. And the reason the court held that way. It's because the whole idea of copyright is to advance the progress of the arts, not to send it back and put people back in caves, you know, where they're afraid to create. And so you're right when you say, is it inspiration or has somebody stolen? And you can't be a professional musician, you can't be a producer and not have a great mind and a great understanding of what came before you. And so you're absolutely correct when you say, how do you divorce yourself from what is in your brain, what you've heard before? And the answer is you can't, and you really shouldn't. You want to build on the past. What can't you do? What you can't do is you can't take somebody note for note, phrase for phrase, melody for melody, and take their lyrics and put it in a song and claim it's yours. And copyright infringement cases need to get back to that. And I'm hoping with a good decision out of the Ninth Circuit on the Blurred Lines case, we'll get back to being able to separate out inspiration from stealing.
Well, Larry Eisner, thank you very much for joining us today on the Not Old Better Show. We're going to follow this case. We're going to follow you. We're going to put links up on our pages to find you and the work that you do, your opinions. I know that there is a Forbes magazine article that is posted as of today. That's the 16th of June that you've written. We're going to link to that too. But where else, Larry Eisner, would you like people to look for you online?
Well, if you would like to follow me on Twitter, you can do so at Larry Eisner. I have been writing a blog for Forbes, so you can check there. But I'm around. I'm often quoted by newspapers and media commenting on these music cases because I've just been doing them for such a long time. So if anybody wants to follow, I never have a shortage of opinions.
Well, we're grateful for your opinions. We're grateful for all your work. And we're absolutely grateful for your time. Thanks very much, Larry Eisner. Larry Eisner, good to talk to you today about this case. And we'll be paying a lot of attention.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.